We had a fuel economy contest years ago, 20 years ago now, and the winners actually got into the 400 miles to the gallon, real highway speeds, really from San Luis Obispo to Carmel, against the wind in Big Sur. Over 400 miles to the gallon. And I think the world kind of yawned. It was ho-hum at that time. Today, I'm back building a motorcycle that I hope gets 100 miles to the gallon, crossing the country in real life. And I'm here to tell you it's hard to do. You hear about people saying, oh, I can get 100 miles. It's very, very hard to do to get 100 miles to the gallon at real highway speeds, sitting up, not all bent over, not crouched. But in fact, I drove it over, rode it over this morning. It's parked out front.
Up and down hills.
Well, yeah. In fact, my brother in Illinois, my dear brother, I love my brother, and I have a challenge. We're going to ride cross country this summer, somewhere between Illinois and California, probably Illinois and the Rockies. He's going to ride his machine that he thinks is going to get the best mileage, and I'm going to ride mine. And it's going to kind of commemorate cross country riding that my brother and I used to do in the 1960s. We would get on our bikes and ride from Illinois to the Rockies in 1967, 68, 69, and then turn around and go back. And that was all on 305s,
Hondas,
350s. Yeah. And we used to get 40, 43 miles to the gallon. They were motorcycles that were 30, 35 horsepower. That's about what they were. That's why they got the kind of mileage. We've been in the motorcycle business ever since. Now we're, well, he's retired, but I'm not. I can't quit.
No, don't stop.
Well, back up a little bit. Let's kind of give people a little bit of background. You created Vetter Motorcycle Accessories, and tell us a little bit about that, and then back into your story.
Okay. Well, the common I'm a designer. I graduated from the University of Illinois in 1965, and so I am what's called an industrial designer. Now, we're all different. All designers are different. But most industrial designers go off and design vacuum cleaners, the microphones that we're talking into, watches, glasses, cars, hubcaps, steering wheels, fans. That's what industrial designers do. They design products for industry to make. Well, when I graduated, there was nobody doing anything I wanted to do, which was to make little machines for people, hauling people around. That's the common thread. Vehicles that took you farther on less fuel. And I learned that from Buckminster Fuller, who was one of my heroes in college. Buckminster Fuller was the inventor of the dome that we use for radar and large buildings. And his philosophy as a designer was to do more with less. Well, motorcycles did more with less. Motorcycles got 40 miles to the gallon in 1966. Cars got 10. So I would design for motorcycles, but there was nobody designing for motorcycles in 1966. So I had to go into business for myself. I made a fairing, a slippery fairing, that my friends bought, and then their friends bought, and eventually, between 1966 and 1978, I employed over 500 people. I had a factory in California, had a factory in Illinois. As a matter of fact, only Harley-Davidson in motorcycling was bigger than Vetter Corporation in 1978, and we were making money. So then I sold the business as in 1978, motorcycles were very, very good to me. Married the prettiest girl at the factory, Carol. She gave us two wonderful boys, Zach and Morgan. Morgan is working with my brother back in Illinois, and their company builds saddlebags for Harley-Davidson. So it's still in the family. Our son Zach is home, and he's become a filmmaker, a video editor, and Macintosh whiz, and hopefully he's listening here. Now the boys are out of the house, and it's time to get back. And what can I do? What can a lowly designer do today? Well, my God says that He wants us to be good stewards of what He's given us. And the thing that looks to me like we're not being good stewards of is our fuel. We're burning it up. We're burning it up faster than we're producing it. In fact, 2 out of every 3 gallons that I put in my scooter, that you put in your car, that you put in your race cars, is imported. It comes from other countries. We're making these guys rich, and some of these guys hate us. Well, what can a designer do? I can go back to my roots, which is do more with less energy. And today, motorcycles still get, no, most motorcycles don't no longer get 40 miles to the gallon.
No,
most
don't.
Motorcycles get 28, 30.
32.
Uh-huh. Whereas a lot of cars now can get 40 miles to the gallon. Well, what's happened? And I made it my business in the last couple years to try to figure out what has happened and what I can do about it. And what actually has happened is motorcycles have gotten more powerful. And just like more horses eat more hay, more horsepower engines burn more fuel. Jerry Branch is a famous engine designer, and you might have heard of him. He was the man behind every fast Harley-Davidson between 1968 and 1985. And he said, my job in life is to burn more. I get more horsepower by burning more air and fuel. That's my job. That's what I've done all my life. Well, we want to burn less fuel. Obviously, what we have to learn how to do is learn how to live on less horsepower. I know it's absolutely contrary to what men have been doing for 100 years. I mean, every man I know believes you can't ever have too much horsepower. Those days are over. Because the horsepower that we crave, that we've gotten used to having, that we think is ours, is now coming from outside our country, and the whole game is weakening America. So as a designer, my job is to do more with less horsepower. And the little Helix that I have out front, a lot of local people have probably seen this thing running around town. It is it's just a standard Helix motorcycle that has a cardboard tail on it and a cardboard nose on it. The idea is to find out what happens when you really streamline a motorcycle. And streamlining is only one shape. It's round at the front. It's pointed at the rear. Common belief has been that if you have a big tail hanging off a motorcycle, that the wind will blow you over. I believed it most of my life. But I needed to find out, because streamlining is only one shape. It's round at the front. It's pointed at the rear. If you saw World's Fastest Indian.
Yeah, it was a good movie.
Yeah, well, it's round at the front, pointed at the rear. No stylist can overcome a basic truth. It's the shape God gave to fish. It's the shape he's given to birds. No stylist can improve on that shape.
So, Halley's Comet? Round to the front, way to the back. Things go through outer space. Yeah. I don't know.
I think that's gas back there. Yeah. Well, so my first chore here was to take the vehicle that I thought had the best potential for mileage, and it turns out to be any kind of motorcycle, any kind of two-wheeler, any car with 20 horsepower or less, and put a long tail on it out of cardboard and see if it really is dangerous, see if the wind really does blow me over. So for the last 1,000 miles, I've been driving my Honda Helix 17 horsepower scooter with this long tail. Down Big Sur and back on 68 over to Salinas, over the bridge in Salinas in the afternoon where the Bunny Farm flag is pointing straight to the right on the way to Salinas, and see what happens. And you know what happens in side wind when you have a tail? The tail balances out the sudden gusts. And whereas every motorcycle is affected in side winds, it blow to the right, blow to the left. When you put a tail on it, it still blows. But it's smoothed out. It's like a damper. It's like a steering damper. It's like a shock damper.
Interesting.
So it'll still move, but the gusts are less sudden, and it's more stable. Well, who knew that? I didn't know it. You don't know it until you go out and try. There's an interesting story. I don't know. Do we want to go into interesting stories about tails?
Sure.
Do you have time?
We got some time.
I love this story. We in the motorcycling had a very famous racer back in 1930s. His name was Joe Petrelli. Joe Petrilli was a hill climber. He was really fast on Harley-Davidsons. In 1936, Harley-Davidson came out with their knucklehead. Everybody's heard of a Harley knucklehead.
Sure, yeah.
First modern overhead valve, powerful engine. Mr. Harley wanted to set some records, so he called his buddy Joe and said, let's set a speed record. So they went to Milwaukee, and they got the first three knuckleheads, and they built one motorcycle with a tail, big, long tail on it, and a little bit of a streamlined front. As a designer, I'm here to tell you, they did a good job. They did a good job. They went down to Ormond Beach in 1936 to set records. Joe Petrilli got up to 130, 140 or so, and the front end lifted. And he said, I can't drive this thing. I have to take the tail off. And he went out and set a record of 136 or so. But the word got around that tails are dangerous. You can't ride with a tail on a motorcycle. Well, I carried this story around all my life. And when it came time to, I've been writing a book on tales of motorcycle design. And after 40 years of doing this, it dawned on me that there's something else going on with this tail business that most people just accepted and forgot and said, can't drive with a tail. My reasoning was that in 1936, aluminum was a very precious kind of material, and these guys didn't have access to aluminum. They probably made that tail out of steel. It hung out 4 feet off the rear of the Harley.
Wow.
And so my reasoning was that they had all this weight at the back, and it was the weight that was causing the problem. And if you remember, in the world's fastest Indian, you kind of got a glimpse. If you want good handling in a motorcycle, probably a car too. In fact, I know it's a car too. You want the weight at the front, and you want the center of pressure at the rear. Center of pressure is like the tail of an airplane. Mm-hmm. It's also like on bow and arrows, having the weight at the front, the weight part, and the fins, the feathers at the back. So that is the natural way to have good handling at speed. Well, what happened with Joe Petrilli? He had the weight at the back. And so I chased down the man who restored the motorcycle, a guy named Schley up in Chicago, and I said, tell me, what did you find in the tail? I said, first of all, is it really made out of steel? And he said, yeah. He said, it's really heavy. And he said, it's even worse, Craig. He said, to get the back end all smooth and pretty, they used lead. They padded lead into the very end.
Oh, no.
So the numbers at Harley-Davidson looked good.
So I went to the museum. Marty Rosenberg said, sure, crawl under here. They let me in the Harley Museum a couple of years ago, and I crawled underneath with my camera and banged it. It was the back end of that motorcycle. It was full of lead. And so it wasn't the tail that was the problem. It was the weight at the back that was the problem. And so that's why I was very, very confident to go ahead and build a cardboard tail, which doesn't weigh anything, and go for a ride in the wind. I thought that was kind of an interesting story, if you followed motorcycle things, you know you just can't put tails on motorcycles, but you can. You can.
Wow, that's amazing.
Well, you being an inventor, you're an innovator. I think like anything, you got to do trial and error. One guy says it doesn't work, and
another guy said,
there's a guy that went 130 miles an hour and lifted the front end off, and everybody's going like you're thinking, oh, maybe it doesn't work. And then all of a sudden, sometimes the wheel can be reinvented, you know.
You realize that there's a lot of weight back there. And
when you're saying lead, that's what they did then. And when you're telling the story, I'm thinking, well, tin's not that heavy. And now, of course, when they wanted it smooth and you want your number, Harley-Davidson wants Harley-Davidson on there.
That's
you
right.
Know? So part of it was strictly used for advertising.
There was no Bondo in 1936.
No, there wasn't. That was definitely the old torch and lead.
That's right. That's why bodies were so heavy and thick. Back sure. then when they were manufactured and repaired.
And what do we call them? Lead sleds.
Lead sleds.
Oh, love lead sleds.
Oh, sure. The Mercs and all that stuff. Well, when you chopped a top or did all the customizing back then, French the headlights and shave the door handles and all those terms and whatnot. And there's a guy there with this, I don't know if anybody's ever really seen one, but a little blowtorch with the cup thing on it. I know Greg's looking at me. Yeah. They got a
stick,
spoon.
And they push the lid in place and it stays there.
Yeah, it's just like sticking mud.
Yeah.
Liquid mud. And that's lead sleds. And obviously they don't use lead anymore, but because our synthetic products are pretty phenomenal now. They last, they don't crack. When a Bondo came out, it cracked, but nowadays it's a pretty good product.
Yeah, it's pretty reliable. So you've gone this next step. So what's your next project or where's your next experiment? I mean, you talked about 400 miles per gallon on a motorcycle. What are your ideas coming up here in the future here with this?
Well, you can get 400. We know you can get 400. Actually, the winners got 470 miles to the gallon. And even if you threw out the most extreme and said, well, what's the next one? The next ones are well into the high 300s miles per gallon. So we know that that's possible. But to do it, you got to make yourself real small. You got to be bent over. You got to be crouched. It's no fun. You don't want to drive to Illinois like that.
No bike's going to carry me.
No. You don't want to ride that way. So you have to step back and say, okay, what's a really a comfortable riding position, and what will I really be happy with crossing country? You know, obviously there are riding positions because people ride Gullwings and they ride Harleys and road kings cross country, yeah. BMWs. Obviously there is a position that is acceptable. So not only is there, so we know that that's possible. Well, it turns out that a Honda Helix has got a rare combination of qualities. It has the good position. In fact, it has an even more comfortable position than a motorcycle because it's more lawn chair-like. It's more easy. It's more lazy boy style. So that's number one. Number two, it doesn't have a tank between your legs, which means you can walk over, sit down, and ride away. And then the other thing is it has 17 horsepower. So I already know from my previous experience that horsepower burns fuel. I have to have less horsepower. How do I make less horsepower do more? Streamlining. It all follows. So, but the best streamlining is not at the front. The best streamlining is at the rear. It's from your back rearward where the air turbulates and wants every motorcyclist. Are you a motorcyclist?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know when you ride down the road that your neck gets wet, cold. If the air blows back, if you have a windshield on, you know that the air comes over the windshield and comes back and then blows backwards into your passenger or backwards into you and makes your back cold, makes your back cold. It comes in backwards.
You ever seen anybody riding down the road with their T-shirt on and
goes back?
T-shirt's all, you know. Yeah. It looks kind of goofy. You know?
A smart motorcyclist knows to carry a girl on back because she acts as the fairing for the rear. Well, so I know that, and I know that I need to streamline the back. Well, you cannot streamline the back of a motorcycle because you have to throw your leg over it, and the streamlining is in the way of your leg. Can't do it. My brother has chosen a motorcycle. He can't streamline it. So what he's going to do is lay down on his tummy. Well, I don't want to do that.
That's a long ride.
I don't think he's going to want to do that, but he's thinking he will. So so I've picked this Honda Helix, and then I can, because I don't have to throw my leg over it, I can sit down, and the whole back of it can be streamlined. And that's exactly what I've done. So,
Greg, I guess my question, we're seeing a picture of it, which you guys can't see out there, but so you're mostly into the aerodynamics and exterior design on what where you're coming up with your gas mileage, correct?
Yeah.
Are you doing anything at all as far as fuel delivery, different type of oils to use inside the motor, different type of oils for the bearings on the wheels, any of those type of things you take consideration? Or
that's why I'm here to talk to you.
Oh, good. Oh, okay.
but consider this.
I mean, I jumped the gun.
No. Consider this. This it has been very, very difficult for me to readjust my thinking. Because for 100 years we've read about getting more power out of an engine. You know, in racing you have classes. You have, you know, 1,000 cc classes, you got 250 cc classes, and cars, I think everything jumps up. But, you know, you've got all these classes. And so what we try to do is get the most power out of a 250, most power out of 1,000 cc's. And believe it or not, there are some people that have, ceramic 250s, turbocharged and supercharged, that run glow, the whole thing glows. You know, that are putting out 250 horsepower out of a quarter of a liter.
Oh, there's no doubt.
Yeah. Well, it was a big surprise to me. But that doesn't do me any good because try to readjust your thinking here. One horse eats this much straw. Two horses eat twice that much straw. The same is true in an engine, a gas-burning engine, diesel-burning engine. You put out one horsepower, you're going to burn what is it, a half a pound an hour per horsepower. I believe that's what it is. I think it's a half a pound. I won't carry these numbers around so well. You put out 2 horsepower, you're going to burn 2 pounds of fuel per hour. There is no way around. There is no way around this. So what's the least amount of power? Well, we know that if you're all bent over from the fuel economy contest years ago, you can go down the road at 60 miles an hour and burn and consume 3.3 horsepower. Ooh, 3.3, that's not very much horsepower. But the price is you're all squished down into this tiny little streamlined fairing. So step backwards. What if I want to sit up? What if I want to, then what? Well, I'm guessing maybe 12 horsepower is all I need. But there are no 12-horsepower scooters on the road. Everyone thinks you need more. So the Honda Helix comes with 17. It's got way more horsepower than I'm going to need to cross country. Why would I want to increase my horsepower? Because anything I do to my engine is going to make it give me more horsepower, and more horsepower burns more fuel. It's a hard thing to think about. It's a hard thing to readjust our brains to. I still have a hard time myself because when I go back and interview the people who did so well in fuel economy contest 20 years ago, a couple of them said, they all said, you don't change the carburetor. You don't change the jetting. You don't change anything on the engine. The only thing we did was we put Filtron air filters in and we put free-flowing exhaust pipes and mufflers. And my thought is, why? If that gives you more horsepower, you're burning more fuel. So that is why I am not touching the engine, because it already has more horsepower than I need. If I started hot rodding the engine and gave it 25 horsepower, I'd have to debore it and destroke it to take it back to 12.
Take it back to what you want.
Yeah. So, see, it's hard to think about, isn't it? I'm looking at the ceiling.
I'm a motor builder.
And
I have a shop. I've been in the business for years. Customers ask me for a certain type of motor. Nowadays, they're leaning a little bit on your way of thinking, far as they're saying, Mike, I want horsepower, but I don't need a lot of gas. And I said, guys, when you take something, you got to give something. And I said, we got to balance it out and to make it work. Well, nowadays, they're having some lower cubic inch motors that are fuel injected. And, you know, let's say we'll pick a car pretty simple, the late model Corvette, for instance. It's a small liter V8, but it has the fuel injection that's pulling a lot of horsepower, but still eats gas. But the efficiency of the fuel seems to be delivered a lot better. That's why I was asking, you know, on the bike, is there any type of fuel delivery changes you might have made? Even to detune it, you could do a fuel delivery to the motor to detune it, to even give it less gas just on intake.
Well, you know, you already know a whole lot more than I do.
And
I would this is a good forum. We can all learn a whole lot by back and forth. It looks to me like Americans want lots of power, but they want fuel economy. It looks to me like, and I know from Coast Down studies, that a normal American car/pickup truck. Do you know how many horsepower it takes to push one of those down the road at 60 miles an hour? Take a guess.
I don't know. I'm just going to go with I don't know.
About 20. So my question to you, Mike, is if it only takes 20 horsepower to push a car down the road at 65 miles an hour, no winds, flat, you know, 20 horsepower, and your engine's rated, let's say you've got this new super-duper Lexus that says it got 400 horsepower.
Yeah.
My question is, what are the 380 horsepower doing when you only need 20? You know, it'd be very, very hard for me to sit here and say, look, you know, we're in trouble. We got to burn less fuel, and then go out in the parking lot and find out I have a guzzler. I mean, you would think much less of me. I would think much less of you.
I got a lot of guzzlers.
but you know, it isn't your passion to be an unguzzler. It's my passion to be an unguzzler, and so the things I have are unguzzlers. They're bikes that really that Helix that we just walked out and looked at, it really gets 64 miles to the gallon all the time. 64 is pretty good, and I'm hoping to take it up to 100. My KLR with more horsepower, well, it doesn't get 64. The best I can get out of it is 50, 54, because KLR has got 36 horsepower. or the, twice the horsepower that the Helix has.
Now, is this 64 miles to the gallon without the fairing, without the tail and the chrono?
Yeah,
is that
it with? Makes no. Right now, the tail, all that foam board tail stuff you saw is just to see what happens with side winds blowing on a long tail, which we talked about that earlier.
Sure.
And I am now confident that the long tail is not going to hurt a thing, and in fact, it helps a lot. So. The thing's not streamlined. You look, when I sat in and showed you, you can see the air is still a lot of hole. There's not. You need a continuous, one smooth, continuous surface to be streamlined. And what I have out there is not. It's got a bunch of holes and it's got a bunch of tape and it. You know, it's not. But it will be.
Well, you're testing it, I'm sure.
It will be when it's all done. It will be smooth and continuous and look like a big fish.
What gas mileage did you actually? What now? You said the bike just right off the showroom floor gets 64 miles per gallon, correct?
That's right.
What have you achieved by putting on the tail and all the stuff that you showed us downstairs? What gas? What did you increase?
Nothing. Not a thing.
Not a
because
thing.
What's down there is not smooth and continuous, and it's the area I sit in is a big air scoop in itself. So it's done nothing. It hasn't hurt it. It hasn't helped it. Yeah, maybe it might have helped it 4 miles to the gallon. I'm not sure. I think it's a fluke. But you know, I really try to be as honest and unbiased as possible.
Sure.
It's very, as you know, when we build things, it's very, very hard to have it make a different sound or have it make a different, you know, and think, oh boy, this is really good. I did a lot, but I would rather think that what I've done so far has been nothing more than to figure out what happens in side winds, and I am not afraid of side winds, and so I will. I have continued to do the tooling to make one smooth fishy shape and figure out how to get that on there. Then, without touching the engine, without touching the gearing, ride it. And so I'll come back in 2 months, and I'll tell you in all candor what – or you can follow it on the webpage. The whole project is on my webpage, www.craigvetter.com, C-R-A-I-G, V for victory, E-T-T-E-R. Mike Corbin did a really neat thing. Mike has a shop up in Watsonville.
Mike's
where he
makes, a great guy.
Makes wonderful
seats.
Mike has been developing his three-wheeler car, and son of a gun, if he didn't show us day by day how he was developing that car called a Merlin – now, Mike's always advanced. Mike has always been at the forefront. He was the first guy in the motorcycle business and the internet. And he, I thought, what is he doing? He's showing us his moles and warts. And then I realized that he was actually, because there are a lot of us who like to follow the progress of a designer. How do these things happen? How does a man make a three-wheel car? What are his problems? Well, Mike was showing us every week. If you were on his mailing list, you got to see how he developed his three-wheel car. So I thought, I'll bet there's a lot of people who would like to see how a designer develops a 100-mile-per-gallon cross-country scooter. And that's why I'm putting mine up on the webpage, too, day by day as I do things. Every couple of days, like I spent last night before going to bed, putting up on my webpage all the pictures of where we are right now and kind of what I hope and what I expect. And already in 3 weeks of work, you can see where I'm not really where I started. That's how designers work. The whole idea for me, because I don't think I'm going to end up with anything commercial here, but who knows. The whole idea for me is to encourage other people like me and like you to say, well, that's not hard. That's not rocket science. I can do that. Why, look at that. It didn't cost anything either. Well, I can do that. That's the whole point. So many Americans today think they can't do anything. Well, I'll pay somebody to restore this. I'll pay somebody to make it, give it more horsepower. I'll pay somebody. We don't have to do that. In fact, it's very, very pleasant to do your own things, and it's very rewarding. I'd have to say that as a motorcyclist, I am happiest when I'm testing something and knowing that I'm doing something no one's ever done before. It makes it special. And to me, it's a very American invention. It's what made our country great, is making things. Like, Wright brothers, we can fly. Well, it's Henry Ford. I can make an inexpensive car. People say, oh, well, you can go to China. I don't want to go to China.
No, it's America.
I like America.
This is
where
I live.
Stay. That's right, and I want to encourage other Americans we seem to have been raised in a culture where we can't do anything. We can do things.
Oh, sure, we can.
And so that's what I want to encourage.